Doctor Who podcast by a fan and her dad.
No, it's a fan and his daughter. Season 6, Episode 9, Night Terrors.
You have to be careful how you say that, or it might sound like we're doing a crossover episode and we're actually reviewing Night Terrors.
I was about to say that. You stole my line.
I wonder, was this before Night Terrors came out? I can't remember.
I think so.
So I wonder if this was the thing which gave them the idea.
It's not really very similar at all.
No, but just the title. The title and the pun. So I had another idea. Maybe we could start this episode with you singing the song. It was creepy, wasn't it?
Yeah. I like how that's built up slowly. Like, I'm not sure this is the first episode or not, because it's in a couple of episodes and I can never get the timeline straight in my head because we watch them all out of order. But how even within this episode, like at the start, I didn't notice the first time around, but they're just playing in the background. Like that melody.
The melody, yeah.
So that even if you're only watching this episode, by the time it gets to a point where you can actually hear them singing it clearly, it's already quite familiar because it's been in the background quite a bit, which means by the time it gets to the final version of the song in, what episode's that? The Tesselecta Fish one.
Ah, so I think is the Wedding of River Song.
Yes, by the time it gets to that one, you know it really well.
Yeah, well, it's Murray Gold who's responsible for the music, and I think he does a really good job. In fact, it's one of the things that really distinct, even though I don't always notice the music during an episode, it's one of the things that distinguishes the periods of Doctor Who that I am most taken by. One of the things that I have real difficulty with the Colin Baker and particularly the Sylvester McCoy eras is the kind of music which is being played. I developed an allergy in the 1980s to synthesizer, and I'm getting over it, but that's just still too much.
I think this soundtrack's one of those things. You don't really notice it when it's good. Okay, that's sort of the point. There's music there and that's sort of affecting how you feel, but you don't notice it. You just listen to the dialogue.
I think that can be true. It depends a bit on what's the intention of the composer and how are they trying to use the music. But I think that that is often the case with his music. Apart from like some of the themes of the companions or the doctors, and you might note, I might notice when that kicks back in an episode. He did a great job of weaving that through the episode. Yeah. So it really packed a punch at the end. In fact, it skipped right to the end. The whole thing packed a bit of a punch. I don't know about you. I do really, because I was watching. But I got a little teary at the end there. It was quite emotional, I thought.
It was emotional at the end. It was also a quite scary episode, which is... I haven't watched a properly scary one for a while.
Well, and in fact, this is a rewatching for you. You watched it just recently and you specifically requested it. For that reason, didn't you? What were some of the things that you found really scary about it?
Well, that music, I think, is part of it, which I don't think I noticed so much watching it the first time, but this time. It's just sort of the whole, like, setup from the moment it starts, like, the shots of that apartment building made it so, like, not exactly tense, but, like, it set up what sort of episode it was, that by the time we see that person getting into the elevator, I automatically thought, she's going to die. It's like we've got these slightly creepy shots of this apartment building, a single person getting into an elevator, she's going to die. She didn't, but, you know, there were some funny bits.
That's true.
Like, I like at the very end, Amy and Rory step out of the elevator. Amy turns to Rory and goes, did I? He goes, yeah. And they just walk off.
I like too when they woke up in the doll's house and he said, oh, we're dead.
Yeah.
Again.
I love that.
There's a little bit of levity in there, but it was quite a scary episode. And playing on the idea of like the nursery rhyme or the fairy tale, the scary aspect of that. And this is Mark Gatiss who wrote this one, but in The 11th Hour and also The Beast Below.
Yeah.
And you had that, again, a kind of a nursery rhyme or a poem that's being recited by a child and given a really creepy feeling.
But some of the things that kids sing, they are really creepy. And it's like you don't really notice it at the time. But
yeah, and a lot of the fairy tales that you have grown up, they've actually been creepier even in the past, and the versions have been gradually sanitized, but there's still that essence there, isn't there?
Yeah.
There was a number of really good shots, although, again, I'm reminded of Paul Cornell saying basically just by turning down the lights, they're tricking me into thinking it's a better episode than it really is. But there are a lot of shots that I saw when Rory was walking around with the torch and you were getting a lens flare, and even the materialization in the puddle. I thought that was just a beautiful shot.
I found it very creepy and effective. When there were the lights that were turning on and off 5 times, and then there was Rory was holding the torch and he was sort of like pointing up his face like you do at the campfire, make you look all spooky, and it was flashing on and off. It's like, stop doing that. I'm not. And it just keeps flashing. That was really it.
And the whole thing with the dolls and the way that the people were turning into the dolls, which is more of that body horror. I mean, that's a really creepy thing too. And by actually having Amy being caught, you raise the stakes of the whole episode at that point.
That was one of the funnier bits at the end. The doctor said, where's Amy? And Rory just looked at the Amy doll and he's like, oh.
He definitely ramped up his efforts to sort the situation out at that point.
So we were saying earlier, with the soundtrack, how you don't really notice it when it's good. There was one thing which was annoying me was George's breathing. How you could hear that really loudly. But, like, it wasn't in time. Like, you could see him breathing on the screen, like his chest rising and falling, and then it wasn't the same as his breathing, and it was just annoying me.
I was going to say you've got better eyesight than me, but we know that because I need glasses. But I didn't notice that, but that's an interesting thing to pick up.
Even sometimes when, like, you can probably see exactly how he's breathing, it's just like, it just looks like this doesn't match.
This was Mark Gatiss. So you haven't really seen many of his episodes. How would you say it compared against Robots of Sherwood and Sleep No More and the other one that you've seen that I've just forgotten?
The Cold War.
Cold War.
I think Cold War is probably the one that's the most similar to it. Robots of Sherwood isn't, like, creepy, really, like the others are. And with Sleep No More, the way that's shot keeps pulling you out of it a bit. But this one was quite like Cold War, and they're both creepy but also funny and like entertaining.
So it's entertaining and it was scary, but there were some funny bits. It was properly scary, this one. How would you rate it, you know, compared to, I don't know?
I think the Beast Boy might be more enjoyable for me because it's less scary.
Less scary, yeah.
Like this one's sort of getting close to
too scary.
So it's not entertaining, but it still is enjoyable. But yeah, they're both very good episodes.
It's interesting you say that because, as we've discussed before, I don't actually really like scary things that much, and I had never rewatched that episode. But you wanted to watch it. You wanted to watch it again, and I'm glad you did because I'd actually forgotten a lot about it.
I think it's also very interesting rewatching something as quickly as I have with this, which I'm not sure if I've done before with anything other than the 50th anniversary special, which doesn't really count.
It's its own special category.
When I started that sentence, I was going to say I don't think I've done that with anything before.
And then you remembered we watched it 12 times in 2 days.
No, we watched it 12 times in 7 days. Get it right, Dad. So that was interesting because it meant that I picked up on a lot of extra things because, like, I could remember most of it, like, apart from the very small details, which meant that that was what I was watching.
It's one of the real challenges when they make a TV show like this. Back in the beginning of Doctor Who, they'd make it, it would get shown 1 week. There was no expectation anyone was ever going to see it again.
Yeah.
And so I think sometimes even with the pacing, things are slow because you needed time to take in what was going on. Yeah. Whereas now you know it'll be on DVD or it'll be available for download and it'll be repeated. It'll be on iView, which is where you've watched it. So you need to make something which both works in that initial watching it once, and maybe a lot of people, maybe the majority of people, that's they'll only see it that one time. But then it may also be subjected to viewing after viewing after viewing.
with older episodes as well. Not sure how often were they, like, how close together were they shown?
Originally, well, in the UK it was weekly. So yeah. We had that weird thing from, certainly when I was growing up, they were showing it 5 nights a week.
That would be a bit of a thing when they're making it, would be like if someone had missed the last one or if you'd just forgotten bits about it, restating things.
Yeah, a bit like I found that a bit off-putting in the Harry Potter series. They'd keep on through all of the different books. There'd be these paragraphs and sentences which were repeated again and again, but you couldn't... You know, you couldn't be sure that someone who was reading this one had read the last one recently, and maybe they hadn't read it at all, so you'd have to throw in a few things to remind people.
And one of my friends at school watched Order of the Phoenix before she'd read any of the books. Or no, maybe she read the first one.
For the benefit of the listeners, there was a priceless expression on the young woman's face just then. Sacrilegious and shocked all in one.